Good evening, and welcome to The Simple Truth, hosted by Jeff Lewis, every Saturday evening, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 to 9 Eastern on BBS Radio, where if it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com. Tonight, Saturday, May 5th, 2007, we'll be talking with the vitamin lawyer, Ralph Cusicola. Ralph Cusicola, J.D., an attorney with over 34 years' experience in the nutrient natural health field. He has recently made himself available as a consultant to view websites for compliance with Federal Trade Commission's FTC and Food and Drug Administration's FDA, advertising and labeling requirements internationally to permit web merchants and organizations the opportunity to benefit from my experience. He has many up-to-date formats for the documentation needed to properly market nutrients and natural products. He also is a consultant with complementary and alternative practitioners and has useful formats for them as well. We also like to announce, again, Light Enterprises, presenting Living Waters with Dr. Masuro Emoto in Orem, Utah, May 23rd, 2007. This will be Dr. Emoto's first ever lecture in Utah. He'll be joining us in blessing the waters of Utah, as well as sharing his amazing discoveries in the realm of waterology and the vibrations of sound. It will be taped and put on DVD and available shortly after the event for those that cannot attend. Tickets are on sale now and seating is limited, so contact as soon as possible at sacredtech@talks.net to order Dr. Masuro Emoto's books, DVDs, posters, and more. Go to www.tobehealthynow.com and go to the Waterology button on the left. Please join in tonight's show, and together we can travel through the dimensions of time and space. To call in, the numbers are 877-876-5227. Toll free in Canada, 888-810-8322. For international callers, it's 530-876-3222. We would like to make sure that you're sure to check in on our updates at our main website at www.tobehealthynow.com, and be sure to listen to our past shows on the BBS Radio Archive. For any questions, feel free to contact your host anytime at sacredtech@cox.net. Now, for those out there trying to stop truth and life, here is our disclaimer. Do not take the word of our host, announcer, or the word of any of our guests when it comes to your health, your knowledge, or your freedom and rights. This show and its websites and BBS Radio and its websites cannot nor will not be held liable for those results achieved or not achieved from the use of our products or suggestions. This program is for your educational purposes only and is not meant to replace the advice of a conscious family doctor or a conscious family lawyer. Always search for yourself, educate yourself, and you will discover the truth in anything you want. Stay in the light, seek, and ye shall find. Well, let's get started with tonight's show. It's real exciting. Here is the host of The Simple Truth, Jeff Lewis.
Good evening, conscious listeners, and thank you for joining us here tonight on The Simple Truth, Saturday the 5th. Hope our listeners enjoyed last week's show on part two of the ELF transmissions with Ken C. Scott. Quite interesting. We're starting to get now a little bit more into the legal realm, which is why it's quite coincidental, I should say. I don't like to use that word much anymore, but having the vitamin lawyer on tonight. For any questions regarding last week's show, though, by the way, just email me at sacredtech@cox.net and also get your free copy of the ELF Transmissions Part 1. Let's get started tonight. Ralph, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor. This is the second or third time I think you've been on the BBS Radio Network. First time was with Sherry Edwards.
Yes, indeed.
I heard you on with her. That was a great show. How did you get started in the field of vitamins, nutrition, and our rights and legalities to deal with them?
Well, it really goes back to the late 1960s when my old friends Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw were getting a bunch of their friends to be guinea pigs in their various experiments in mega doses of vitamins. I remember getting bottles of selenium in liquid form from Vitamin Research Products and having to dilute it down to the level where it could be taken by a human being and that sort of stuff, back before there were many vitamin products available. Their research and their, of course, tremendous 1982 book, Life Extension, really solidified a lot of this for me. And of course, I've worked with Life Extension Foundation, which to an extent grew out of that whole nexus back at that period. And I started practicing law in 71, but certainly by 79, National Health Federation had given me a citation for working with people looking for alternative modalities and approaches. And by the late 80s, I was really restricting myself mostly to that, although for the first 15 years of my law practice, I did represent a big Italian family with a construction company and bowling alleys here in New Jersey. I really did have an office next to a bowling alley, actually. Now, however, I'm in the western northwestern corner of the state, up in the woods, and I'm not you know, handling representation, litigation, and that sort of stuff. I'm focusing entirely, as your announcer said, on working with people in the natural products, nutrition industry, people who are alternative practitioners of all sorts, and helping to make sure that their practices are safe. And I do that through my website, vitaminlawyer.com. So that's basically what it's been. It's been an internet consulting activity, and it's been wonderful because I get to meet so many great people around the country, and I help them prepare so that they don't have to deal with the authorities because they're being careful and staying within the law. At the same time, that law needs to be changed, and it needs to be changed in a good direction, not a bad direction. In the past few weeks, it seems there have been a lot of assaults on our freedom as adults to make our own health care choices. And I'd love to talk a little bit about some of those arcane political goings-on, and I think they're worth taking a look at because, you know, our freedom to make those choices and to use the alternatives we want to use depend on a mixture of laws on an international, national, and state level. And on all those levels, there have been tremendous assaults recently by vested interests. And you know, and they're not just legal assaults. It's not just court cases and that sort of stuff. That's certainly happening, but it's also right. Propaganda assaults. For example, just a month or two ago, the Journal of the American Medical Association published what I call a voodoo science article that taking vitamins might be bad for your health, and it did this by choosing 600 studies out of the perhaps 100,000 studies of dietary supplements that have been done, but they chose 600. And then they whittled that down to 84, and then they decided that these 84 studies showed that vitamins could be harmful to you. Well, you know, if you look for all the worst results from all the worst studies, you may eventually find that. And
you were people drowned from water. You know, hey, water killed them.
Right, exactly. And the Life Extension Foundation put out a very clear and very careful critique of the JAMA article, but of course the mass media only covered the article and didn't cover the careful response.
You that told me about that silver situation where the one they used to ban silver was they picked a gentleman of 70 years, been dipping his arms in silver nitrate tanks,
it was almost that.
And they used to test and show that it's toxic.
Well, there was a lady in the 1940s who had an incurable bacterial infection, and her physician prescribed what's called mild silver protein, which was 40% silver content, and she did turn blue slightly and remained that way for the rest of her life, but the incurable infection was cured. The amount of silver that you get in colloidal or ionic silver products is sufficiently low that unless you really abuse it, it certainly is not going to change your skin tone. And even if it did, that's actually not harmful. You know, it's unpleasant, perhaps, I guess. But, you know...
Ralph, let's start off our show tonight. We're talking about our big win.
Let's talk about that first. Yes, these strange maneuvers the past couple of weeks, it was almost as though there were a 1-2 punch going on. You know, first we get the attack on vitamins in JAMA. And, by the way, I did one radio show on that, and the commentator and I agreed at the end that, well, maybe what we should do is we should let those people who really trust, you know, the authorities on this issue should stop taking vitamins completely. And then in a couple of years, we'll, you know, have the conversation again and see how many people are left to have the conversation. You know? So I'm willing to let them choose not to take vitamins as long as they allow me to choose to take them.
Exactly.
You know, that's the key. So that's the first thing. The second thing that happens is on December 26th, the FDA issues a draft guidance. Now, you know, what federal agents work on the day after Christmas. You know, this should raise our suspicions immediately. But they issue a draft guidance on complementary and alternative, what they call medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, CAM products. We say complementary and alternative modality products because by naming them medicine, you beg the issue. So we want a neutral term. So this was issued, and then 2 months later, on February 26th, they get around to publishing notice in the Federal Register asking for comments, and they give us until April 30th, a rather short period, to submit those comments. That happened, and I alerted some of the people in the health freedom movement around the country, and one of the organizations, Natural Solutions Foundation, decided to take on the issue and mobilize its forces, and they sent out an emailing to their email list, which was tens of thousands of people, expecting, you know, as usual, they would get thousands of responses because they have loyal people. And instead, hundreds of thousands of responses came in directly to the FDA website, overwhelming it, and then through an organization called Democracy in Action. 180,000 people submitted comments to FDA saying, leave our alternatives alone, and another 100,000 tried. So hundreds of thousands of people. While that was going on, Senator Kennedy introduced a bill on April 7th to reform the FDA. And that bill lay there quietly, and then all of a sudden, it was released from committee without any hearings and sent to the Senate on April 29th, I think, for vote. Very, very unusual. So on one hand, the FDA is trying to cover up a guidance which, in my opinion, would have attacked alternatives very severely. And at the same time, Senator Kennedy is bringing a bill in to increase the powers of the FDA and not going through the normal procedure, but rushing it to a vote.
Well, of course, that's what color of law is all about.
Exactly. And so what happened is, because of the tremendous response to the FDA guidance, a number of people on the Hill were very much aware of the hundreds of thousands of people who were screaming, you know, we're mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And they got emboldened by that, some of our friends on the Hill, and some very good people in Washington started lobbying for an amendment to the Kennedy law. Because when you actually take a look at the statute, at the bill, and I did, of course, I went on to Thomas, the Library of Congress's website, and I pulled the bill up, and I did a search. It's wonderful. It's really great access through the Internet.
What is
and,
that website?
The words dietary supplement don't occur in the bill.
What is that website again? You might want to get it.
It's the Library of Congress's website. It's called, I think it may be Thomas.gov, named after Thomas Jefferson, of course. And on that site is the official site of record for all the bills and things pending in Congress. And you can get up-to-date information. In the past, Congress would vote on bills and, you know, not only didn't they read it, but nobody in the country could even see the bill in advance. Now, even though Congress still doesn't read the bills and should, that's another issue, though.
Right.
And yeah, in fact, I don't know, you may be aware of DownsizeDC.org and its Read the Bills proposal, where Congress would have to actually read bills before voting on them. But anyway, the rest of us can read the bills now because they're on the Internet and we can find out what's going on. Even though it didn't have the words dietary supplement in it, one could interpret some of the wording there to expand that power. And Senator Durbin came up with an amendment that specifically excludes dietary supplements or at least products that are governed by DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, from this new law.
Well, I think the rub, and maybe you can help me clarify this, because I'm dealing with a friend of mine that can't even get water into this country, H2O. Literally, if you test that stuff, it's just water. But it's healing people. They're getting them on the labeling. And what they're doing is they're making them change the labeling so many times now. This last time they just told them, you know what, you've changed the label so many times, this can't even be the same product. We're not even going to pass it no matter what you do now.
That's not really fair at all. And it starts off, of course, because the label probably made claims. In my practice, none of my clients make any claims on their labels.
No, there are no claims.
No. We're all labeled.
Be very careful about that. This is Miracule Water. You may have taken a look at this guy. His name's Ron Talmadge. He's got an amazing company that he's been part of to help put together a church, actually, that they started. And they've been pushed out of the country, and now they can't even get the water back into the country to help heal
That's
people.
That's unfortunate, because if they've been approaching it correctly, there are exemptions for ministerial healing. And
he's doing that. He's doing all that. Everything... I heard you talk about
haven't,
that.
Haven't given me a call.
Haven't
given me a call. I think that they must have been approaching it incorrectly, because there are exemptions, and if correctly invoked, people can do that sort of activity as long as they are not claiming to treat and cure disease. And that's
of course.
And that's what Congress, the only thing Congress has ever said to FDA is, you can regulate products that are advertised, labeled, with a claim to treat or cure disease. And there's no general authority in the FDA to regulate all products that, you know, that we put in or on our bodies. It's a limited power.
That's the hardest thing in the world to do then. I mean, nowadays, you can't even, if you have a company selling a health product, you can't even use testimonials. You can use a testimonial if you're using it from yourself.
A testimonial is not proof of how your product works. It's, that's the problem. You can't use it as substantiation. And the substantiation issue is really important, and that's what this whole thing is about. And if you look carefully at the FDA guidance, they said that even the products that are not going to be treated as medicine have to go through have to meet a certain standard. And the standard they put in the guidance is the standard for drugs. And it's exactly the opposite of the standard that they said they were adopting in 2004.
How did they get rocks into this whole thing then, too? Because they've had rocks in there. Use rocks from your friggin'
intent.
Garden.
It's all based on
somebody's body to do any form of healing, comfort them, whatever. You have them hot or cold. That's a medical device.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, rocks.
Yes. Yes, from their viewpoint, that's not an extension of the law. But, of course, from my viewpoint, anytime you codify, anytime a bureaucrat says they're merely codifying the existing law, we know that they're reaching for more power. It's endemic in the beast, as it were, and that's what was happening with the CAM guidance. And I think that the CAM guidance and the Kennedy bill together were meant to be a 1-2 punch to finally get control over this unruly alternative marketplace, which has actually grown. You know, in 1994, when DSHEA was passed, there was about $1 billion a year being spent in this country on alternatives.
Yeah.
In 2005, there were $28 billion spent on vitamins alone. And people are voting with their dollars, their unreimbursed dollars, I want you to know, to choose alternatives because they find the alternatives to be non-toxic.
They work.
And they know that standard medicine produces a lot of dead people every year.
Were you aware that the AMA was created originally to take out homeopathics? I had Dr. Harry Coulter on.
I'm not surprised, but actually, AMA, I thought, was created in the latter part of the 19th century, and the earliest Medical Practices Acts included homeopathy as part of medicine. It wasn't
no,
until
no, 1930. No, it was part of it. It was part of it, but it was so successful, but so cheap and easy to duplicate and effective that they started pushing it out of the medical mainstream.
Well, there was the famous Flexner report. There was the famous
what I'm trying to get across here, though, is the key is that the people continued using it, and because of that, it's still here today and as strong as ever. Again, the people have chosen. And the reason I was asking you this is to get on this line of the people. There's this issue going around that a lot of people are voting online or passing their letters or votes online, and they're not being heard or recognized, or they're being duplicated, so it doesn't really count.
I know with the FDA guidance specifically, they asked for comments from the public as they're required to in the Federal Register. And so those comments, the FDA does tabulate as much as they can. I mean, if there were a few thousand or a few hundred comments, they get, you know, they would deal with them differently than they deal with hundreds of thousands, no doubt. And I spoke to the supervisor of the dockets, the FDA dockets, about a week and a half ago, and she, you know, explained that she has a 9-person staff and what they do and what they can do and can't do. But when you look at how FDA actually operates, for example, when they issued in 1999 the what they call the structure and function claims rule, a little page and a half rule about the type of claims you can make for vitamins, about the normal structure and function of the body, there was 90 pages of commentary on that rule. And basically it was hundreds of paragraphs, and in each paragraph they would refer to some comment someone filed and their response to that. And so they do take comments seriously sometimes. And they were responding to those comments either positively or negatively, and they changed the rule.
Yeah, that wasn't quite the question, but I appreciate that information. But the question was, there's been this thing going around the Internet that our votes online, a lot of people are just trying to do things online now because it's so much more convenient, but they're not being heard or recognized. We're wasting our time.
I know.
When I got the report that in regards to this whole thing with Camden, the whole situation, and I got the report back on that, it said that there were some 300 some thousand votes recognized, another 180 some thousand not, because they didn't get in properly or they were in the computer system, and another 200 and something other thousand that weren't accounted for.
Yeah, it's all very possible, but I can tell you one thing from talking to legislative aides of congressmen over the past week. People on the Hill were quite aware of the number of individuals who were expressing their opinion, and that impacted what happened to the Kennedy bill. And so, in politics, nothing is isolated, and politicians may say, "Oh, don't bother signing internet petitions because it doesn't matter."
Yeah.
But the truth is, they pay close attention to that.
Well, the reason I was saying that is, being a lawyer, I thought you might have a better source that people can go to if you want to confirm that your vote is heard.
It's not a vote. It's just, just an expression of opinion.
Whatever it may be, yeah.
And, there are some formal things you can do. People can file formal petitions with the FDA, which they do. A lot of FDA actions are based on some petition or other, usually engineered by some pharmaceutical company. But there are those methods. We do have the right to petition. And we do have the right to, but that doesn't mean that your petition is going to be accepted. It just means you have a right to do it. That's part of our republic, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, was there any other subject you wanted to cover real quick before I get into a little bit more of what you do?
All right. I just wanted to bring everyone up to date on those issues having to do with not just national, which we talked about, the CAM guidance and the Kennedy bill, but also on the state level. I constantly hear people from around the country. There are MDs, alternative dentists, and alternative practitioners who are constantly in court with the local medical boards, the local dentistry boards, and other licensing organizations. It's a constant battle all over the country, continually, and that battle is turning. Typically, the agencies, the state agencies, would use a certain group of individuals as their experts, a group that were known as the Quackbusters. Those individuals have been neutralized because, of course, they were also proponents of what I call voodoo science. Going back to the Flexner Report, where the same game was played, there is no 100% absolute proof these things work, therefore they don't work. And the truth of the matter is, when you're using alternatives, because of individual variability, you can't get the sort of double-blind experiment results that you're going to get from in other areas of science. The truth of the matter is that the pharmaceutical industry usually doesn't get results that are much better than placebo on all of its drugs. And oftentimes natural alternatives get better results. But that's the state level. The national level we talked about. On the international level, there's the danger of Codex Alimentarius, the World Food Code. And Codex is a real threat because it attempts to codify how foods can be transported around the world, and it does so in a way that seems to always meet the needs of Big Pharma, Big Chema, and Big Agra. But recently, again, with the Natural Solutions Foundation and other people, National Health Federation, there have been efforts made to engage with Codex and with the UN agencies and try to get some changes made. Just 2 months ago, at a meeting in Thailand, a group of countries revolted against the EU-US axis, and forced them to remove fluoride as an allowed ingredient in healthy baby formula. So fluoride, which is an industrial poison, was going to be allowed into formulas, and now it's not. And that's because of a coalition of countries. That's because Natural Solutions Foundation got information into the hands of developing countries about the dangers of fluoride. And by the way, if people want to take a look at what Natural Solutions is doing, the internet portal for that is globalhealthfreedom.org. And that's an important portal because it takes you right into the heart of it. Go to the blog on that website, Dr. Rima Labo, who's a psychiatrist who practiced drug-free psychiatry for many years and has now, stopped her practice and is just fighting health freedom. She says she has to cure the body politic in order to allow people to be cured in their own lives. And so she was just in Ottawa at the Codex Labeling Committee on Food Labeling. And what was going on in that dry UN meeting? attempts to water down organic standards. That's one thing that was going on, with the U.S. leading the way, and attempts to prevent people from being allowed to label their products GMO-free.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, the U.S. takes a very bizarre position that because FDA studies have shown that Americans would choose non-GMO products if they knew they were non-GMO, and because we all know there's no difference between GMO and non-GMO products, that would be a bad decision, and therefore the government does not want people to know what foods are GMO and non-GMO, so they don't make a bad decision. We are being treated as children again. And not only that, but that position is directly contrary to U.S. law.
Yes.
There was a very important Supreme Court decision, one of the best decisions written by Sandra Day O'Connor back in 2000. It's the case of Thompson versus Western States Medical Centers. And it's about compounding pharmacies, another issue that's been, by the way, on the Internet recently, because there's an attempt being made to further regulate compounding pharmacies. But nonetheless, in this particular case, the Supreme Court said that regulating speech has to be the last, not the first resort of government activities. And then Sandra Day O'Connor went ahead and said the following words, which are so profound and important that every American should memorize it, and it is the following. We have long since, or we have previously, rejected the notion that the government has any legitimate interest in preventing people from making bad decisions with truthful commercial information. And that's a very important concept. Whether our decisions are good or bad is not the government's right to determine.
Decision. Right.
It's our decision. And we're free people and need to be allowed to make those decisions. And the Supreme Court saw that very clearly. The U.S. FDA does not see it, and no matter how many times they seem to get told. And I suspect that the only thing that will ever change that is to take, the FDA is a very confusing and very confused agency. It has been given the job of regulating very dissimilar things, foods and drugs, for example.
It's supposed to be regulating things that are harmful for us and far as keeping them away from us, and they're actually allowing these
things into
the market.
Well, foods are presumed not to be harmful. Right, foods are presumed to be safe, and I think one of the big problems is that the agency has contradictory mandates, and maybe it needs to be divided. Maybe food needs to be separated away from drugs and medical devices, so that they stop trying to treat our foods as though they were industrial toxins, while at the same time ignoring the industrial toxins. You know?
Well, I think it should just be an organization of the people, by the people, and for the people, as we've always created it to be when we without
control of these
types of things.
The truth of the matter is it has always been an organization of Big Pharma and Big Chemma for
exactly.
Big Pharma and Big Chemma.
They do not have people's best
interests at heart. They buy Big Pharma and Big Chemma because the individuals who work there, you know, spend their however many years working in the agency, and then they get their jobs in the industry. And then they get their jobs in the universities, and then they get their higher-level jobs in the agency, and then their higher-level jobs in industry, and the dance goes on. You know, there are some efforts being made to rein in the conflicts of interest in the FDA, and hopefully that will help a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine these people aren't taking herbs, so being on drugs, they're not going to be around much longer anyways.
This is probably true. All right.
So what do you do? I mean, I'm very much into law myself. You and I had a little bit of a chance to talk about that because Sherry wanted you to talk to me in regards to this whole legality thing we were dealing with the software issue on the voice imprinting technology stuff. And,
right.
Well,
what I'm trying to do is basically help people comply with regulations, which themselves are contradictory, and to do so in a way which allows them to practice their practices or sell their products. And that means basically, you know, in the world we're moving into, one's paperwork must be in order. And to a very great extent, bureaucrats don't care what rules they enforce as long as they have rules to justify their jobs. So if a company is careful to have a proper paperwork trail, it is in a much better position and is much less likely to be bankrupted by being singled out and attacked. We know
when you say by paper trail, you mean as in a public record for the public.
The proper records, yes.
Yeah.
And it goes, it varies. If the person is an alternative practitioner, they do need a very, very specific and proper informed consent form for the people that they work with to sign. If a person is you know, if you're a vitamin company, you need standard operating procedures so that you can show the FDA that you are operating in a commercially reasonable way that is taking into account the fact that you're dealing with food. And
right.
you know, if you're going to offer foods to the public, you have to do so in a way that protects the public.
Well, let me just take a moment here before we get into your actual field and just share with you, gentlemen, I will be introducing you to, if you haven't met him already, starting a thing, it's an Earth project or an Earth Shift project. He hasn't actually got the name locked yet and doesn't want to get it out publicly, but it has to do with creating a private membership for $2 a month that anybody that chooses to become part of can become a member and now become and have access to, as an experimenter themselves and research project themselves, have access to all these wonderful and amazing products, from herbs to technologies, whatever they may be in the alternative health field.
Oh, there's no question in my mind that private associations are a very important aspect to all of this. And I've argued for years and have counseled people for years that that the case law is really clear. You can do within a private association what would be a violation of licensing laws in the public.
Like the church and so forth.
And indeed, and the cases that talk about that, you know, if there's any license that is more sacred than the medical license, it's the lawyer's license. And the cases that talk about this issue are cases that arose mostly in the South after the war when state bar associations or members of the bar associations were suing the NAACP and other civil rights groups and labor unions on the theory that the organizations were practicing law without a license. And the courts held over and over again, in effect, people can do in an association, in a private association, what would be the violation of licensing laws to do in the public.
Yeah.
And those laws
are... That's kind of what this gentleman does with that
very settled
water I was telling you about.
Yeah, very much settled law. And the other thing that's been settled law for a really long time is that people do have a right to seek out alternatives. And I, you know, one of my favorite quotes in this area, and it's one worth really all need to hear because it's so eloquent. In 1902, a man named McKnight was accused of practicing medicine without a license, and the state Supreme Court said the following of the medical licensing law, and it applies all the way along the board. Then this is the quote. The state has not restricted the cure of the body to the practice of medicine and surgery, allopathy as it is termed, nor required that before anyone can be treated for any bodily ill, the physician must have acquired a competent knowledge of allopathy and be licensed by those skilled therein. To do that would be to limit progress by establishing allopathy as the state system of healing and forbidding all others. This would be as foreign to our system as a state church for the cure of souls. All the state has done has been to enact that when one wished to practice medicine or surgery, he must, as a protection to the public, not to the doctor, be examined and licensed by those skilled in surgery and medicine. To restrict all healing to that one kind, to allopathy, excluding homeopathy, osteopathy, and all other treatments, might be a protection to doctors in surgery and medicine, but that is not the object of the act and might make it unconstitutional because creating a monopoly. End quote.
Wow.
These issues have been around for a while.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I can talk to you about Henry VIII's famous herbalist's charter, which says basically the same thing, but 500 years earlier. You know, the surgeons of London got a law passed that said no one can practice surgery without approval of the College of Surgeons, the city of London. And then the surgeons immediately started suing herbalists and others, saying that they had to stop what they were doing, they were not allowed to practice. And a couple of years later, the king got Parliament to approve a charter that he issued, the famous herbalist's charter, which is still part of the common law in the United States because it was part of the common law of England. And in fact, it specifically says that it applies to the king's plantations, namely the American colonies. And that law is that people do have a right to practice traditional herbology without a medical license. And that's been law for, you know, the common law for 500 years. So these are rights that are long-standing and have only been under attack for the past 100 years or so by commercial interests that find it, in their interest to attack.
Now, what if you're doing this on like a donational basis? I mean, would it have to be a whole organization set up properly as a church type?
Oh, absolutely.
Could you just simply say, you know, I don't charge for what I do, therefore I'm not making an income off of this? If people choose
I don't think charging has that much to do with it, although certainly accepting free will donations puts you in a little different status. I know that every state has a Medical Practices Act, and I believe every one of those has a paragraph about exceptions, exemptions. And almost every state has in it an exemption for ministerial healing. The language is slightly different from state to state, but it's basically, it allows for certain activities. It does not allow, New Jersey, for example, has states that the ministration to the sick and suffering by prayer and spiritual means, so long as no drug material remedy is used. Now, I don't know what a drug material remedy is. You know, that's an interesting phrase. But I think that all the states have various degrees of exemptions for ministerial healing.
I would think so. I would hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Hope we can at least maintain that right. Well, we're getting a little past halfway through the show here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just give out the numbers again in case any of our listeners would like to call in with any questions for the Vitamin Lawyer. Please do so. Again, the toll-free numbers in the U.S. are 877-876-5227. Toll-free in Canada, 888-810-8322. And for our international callers, it's 530-876-3222. What else can we talk about? You mentioned a few things.
One of the big developments in the past couple of days is that the one man in this country who has inherited the mantle of Robert Taft and Barry Goldwater, namely Dr. Ron Paul, a congressman from Texas, who's running for president. Ron has written and filed with the FDA his own objections to the CAM guidance. And I think...
which was very, very, very well written, by the way.
Oh, it was extraordinary. And I thought
it was
incredible. I'd like to share with the listeners at least the last couple of paragraphs.
Email me for that, too. I've got a copy of that, or I think you might have something on your website, but if you email me at the Sacred Tech, I will remind me of that comment about Ron Paul to the FDA. Just amazing.
It is. Of course, he looks at it from a physician's viewpoint. He's an MD. He's an MD. He's delivered 4,000 babies in his career. And besides being a great American patriot, the congressman who was responsible in the late 70s for re-legalizing the private ownership of gold bullion, which was one of the major steps back from the brink of socialism that this country took, and one of the major steps in undoing the evils of the new deal. But here's what he said, the closing couple of paragraphs of his statement. The CAM guidance is imprudent and will stifle innovation in medicine. The CAM guidance proceeds from a failure to appreciate the in terrorem effect of government action. There is no reason to believe that the states are ineffective in prosecuting those comparatively few practitioners, CAM or non-CAM, who do cause harm. Thus, without any true need for the guidance, it conveys to CAM practitioners that FDA regards certain therapeutic uses of products to be unlawful, as the agency should know that will in turn dissuade those uses despite the dubious legal basis for the FDA's assumption of power. By dissuading those uses, FDA deprives patients of health care options without any proof that its action will improve public health. That is an abuse of FDA power. In sum, I request the FDA to withdraw the CAM guidance. If the rule is not withdrawn, I urge FDA to amend the rule to state unambiguously in the document that FDA is barred by the FDCA, by the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act, from regulating health care practice, and that of off-label use of any regulated product by a healthcare practitioner is lawful under federal law. And the phrase healthcare practitioner is very good because the AMA, and of course Dr. Paul is a doctor, so he fits into that world. The AMA was sued by the chiropractors back in the, late 80s, early 90s. And as a result of the settlement of that lawsuit, it was a suit over restraint of trade, they adopted... the AMA adopted a new ethics rule. It's called Ethics Opinion 3.04. And it tells physicians how they can cooperate with others. And it sets up this structure where the physicians finally recognize the existence of other healthcare practitioners. Uh-huh. And that particular opinion sets forth an important distinction, which we've asked in our comments to the FDA, the FDA acknowledge. And that's the distinction between treatment of disease, which is the use of standard, you know, medicine and surgery, right, to treat disease, and what I call therapies that may benefit. In that particular ethics opinion, there's a convoluted little sentence that sums up, that can be summed up as the phrase therapies that may benefit. And the word may is important in that definition because it isn't held to the same strictures as something that's claiming to cure a disease. And so all of our alternatives are really therapies that may benefit. And under the AMA code of ethics, those therapies can be provided by anyone permitted by law to provide them. You don't have to be a licensed physician. And they're not held up, of course, therefore, to the standard that anything that claims to cure disease is held up to. And I think it's an important distinction, and I think it's a distinction that would allow both the pharmaceutical world and the alternative world to continue to exist without the war that's going on currently. And I think it would be a compromise that would create a legal space for us to act in. So I urge people to take a look at some of that information. If you go to my Vitamin Lawyer website, you'll see that on the menu on the right-hand side, there's something called the Vitamin Lawyer's Free Online Seminar. It's actually a listing of my white papers and sample briefs. And the very first item on that page, when you click through, is an article titled Alternative Practices and the AMA Code of Ethics. And it's about that issue. I think it's one that
I see that right down the middle here.
Yeah, especially practitioners should read, because it gives them a clearer understanding of what they can do and why.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, are there more guys like you out there?
Sure.
Are you the original?
Jonathan E. Mord is in Washington. Does this sort of work and handles litigation, very top level litigation in this area. Jim Turner is a brilliant attorney who's a lawyer for Citizens for Health. Who's a great colleague of mine. Nancy Lord is a fine legal scholar in the area.
Just out of curiosity.
Many others. John Gipps, who's the attorney for National Health Federation, a very, very good attorney.
Uh-huh.
And then Huldah Clark's lawyer, Carlos Negrete, who's just very good, very aggressive.
Now, I haven't talked to you about this, but on what level of law do you go in? Do you go in constitutionally on our rights, or do you go in just under the statutes and codes?
You've got to go in on all levels.
Good. As long as I'm willing to argue
the Helsinki Declaration on experiments and that sort of stuff too. I mean, there's a lot of levels that you need to raise and be willing to raise in this area.
But the object is not to go into court.
The object is for people to be able to practice peacefully and do what they do without having to have to deal with the authorities, who really should only be concerned about egregious cases of harm and not things that are merely matters of choice.
Have you had any cases yourself personally where you've had to go into court for clients?
Oh, of course. Yeah. In 1995, I handled the DHEA cases. DHEA is still legal, at least temporarily, but back in 1995, there was a rumor, this is how our government operates, there was a rumor that the DEA was going to schedule DHEA as a drug. Now, how do you take a normal hormone in the body and turn it into a controlled substance? I don't know. I mean, Congress is trying to do that right now, apparently. But that rumor was out, and therefore somebody in the post office sent out a circular to all the postmasters saying that DHEA was now a controlled substance. Two postmasters in New Jersey noticed that some people were buying DHEA from Germany, and they called up their local narcotics task forces, and a sting was arranged. And this 82-year-old guy in North Jersey and this young woman in South Jersey were arrested at their post offices as they accepted delivery of this contraband. And they both happened to be members of the Life Extension Foundation. And
so
the foundation came to me and said, can you defend these people? I said, of course. And the first thing we did is we made sure, and of course it was true, there was no attempt by the government to make DHEA into a controlled substance. There was no entry in the Federal Registry about it. It just never happened. It was pure rumor.
So they acted falsely on their own rumor?
Oh, of course. That did all the time. And that didn't stop the state narcotics squads from filing charges against these people. And I kept on saying to the prosecutors, there is no law. There's no law that's been violated. And they kept on saying, well, yeah, we'll let them plead to lesser charges. And I said, you took one of my clients' entire library. Well, we can't give that back. It's got books about steroids in it, among other things. And this went back and forth until Julian Whitaker wrote about the story in his newsletter.
Uh-huh.
And 10,000 letters descended on Governor Whitman. Todd Whitman was the governor of New Jersey at the time, on Governor Whitman's head. And all of a sudden, these two prosecutors started falling all over each other how to get rid of the cases. And as a result of that, I got one of them to sign on to an order that said that DHEA was neither a prescription drug nor a controlled substance, but was a dietary ingredient or a dietary substance, whatever was used. And that was signed in 1996 and was faxed around the country. Actually, a copy of it is sitting on my website. And that law, that decision was one that permitted DHEA. By the way, the client did get her library back.
Sure a lot of time and money and stress.
Life Extension Foundation, was willing to fund that. And, unless you can fund it properly, you're going up against government lawyers who have a lot of funding.
Yeah.
So I've handled that one, and I've handled some others. Represented some people in cases. One trial took 20 days over the use of Laetril and insurance reimbursement and stuff. But it's always better to get
people. It doesn't sound any more absurd than what they're currently tried to pass when we beat them again this time, at least. Water. Water was in there too. Bottled water.
Right. Well, if you intend to cure disease with bottled water.
Well, they say if you say this water is for hydration or for dehydration, either one of those, which water just is, you're
right.
Making a claim, and it is now a therapeutic medical product.
So if it hydrates you, that's that is absurd. And
so this
that's
is non-hydrating water.
I believe
water.
That's something. If that got up into the federal court system, when the courts would probably overturn that fairly easily. But one of the problems is that it's so expensive to litigate that unless you're a special interest with large amounts of money, it's really difficult to do that.
Well, I know a lot of these guys, rely and live on soda, but, most of us rely and live on water. So
that's right.
I think it would be a hard one to pass.
So not only soda, but sugar-free soda.
the aspartame's so great, isn't it? Great invention, just like the fluoride.
Yeah.
Suits their needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's well, right. Anything else you'd like to, we've got a few more minutes left here.
Gosh, what do you think your listeners would like to hear about? What do you think their interest is? Let's remember people, let's remind people about some links they can use.
Yes,
globalhealthfreedom.org. Now look, the site gets attacked fairly regularly by hackers, by very sophisticated hackers who must be operating on behalf of some sophisticated organization or others.
Very well paid, I'm sure.
And yep, and so if it's down, go back later because it'll be back up again. But Global Health Freedom is a great place. The blog on that is really interesting. Dr. Labo keeps you up to date. I mean, she spent a week in Ottawa at the Codex meeting, and there are several blog entries just about that. And some of her blog entries from some of the meetings in the past couple of years are very instructive about how the international agencies actually behave, what actually goes on.
Uh-huh.
And really, I've been at them, and it really is interesting to see what goes on and how that system is played, and to see how the United States representatives are not there acting on behalf of American citizens, but are there acting on behalf of certain commercial interests.
Well, I would think at least from our Wynn's example, although, who knows, there may be higher powers that be controlling all this, and it was supposed to be this way this time. But it was definitely, the voice was heard. I mean, you could feel the energy. The emails were coming in constantly the day before and the day of and the day after. And then the following day after that, we got the good news. So it went around the world many times. It wasn't just in this country. A lot of people are aware of what's trying. I mean, this is all part of the Codex, I would imagine. It's just one piece of the stepping stone for their
big exactly. Order. And it's all international. For example, they have something called the North American Union, which is this executive agency, president without any... our imperial president, never bothering to get approval from Congress, has entered into an agreement with Canada and Mexico to coordinate activities. And the FDA has entered into, is now working with their Canadian and and Mexican counterparts. There were some raids on some companies for weight loss companies, and so it's actually an actual functioning alliance of some sort. But
Well, you had mentioned a couple links. I heard you mention one.
That was globalhealthfreedom.org. Life Extension Foundation is always a great source of information, LEF.org. National Health Federation is good. It's thenhf.com. My website, of course, vitaminthelawyer.com, links to a lot of stuff. But at this point, I think the organization that literally is at the front of this whole process and pushing perhaps the hardest is Natural Solutions Foundation, and that's globalhealthfreedom.org. And people want to support that organization, they can go there and they can get on the email list, and there are a whole bunch of petitions and letter-writing campaigns that are going on. And there's a store there, Organics for You, that has non-GMO and organic products, and people who purchase through there are able to help support the organization that way.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what is your, kind of off topic here a little bit, what have you heard much about in the world of self-sustaining communities? I mean, not only do we have to deal with the law and protecting ourselves, but as we know, the future is changing quite drastically.
Energy
and maybe
is
very
the issue.
Dramatically.
Energy is the issue. And self-sustaining communities have to be self-sustaining in the energy they use, or else they're not really self-sustaining communities. And I'm really interested in alternative energy sources and in very high-tech zero-point energy sources. I think that's a lot of stuff that's about to happen. I've read with a great deal of interest Ray Kurzweil's book a couple of years ago, Singularity is Near. While some may say the end is near, his phrase was the singularity is near. And what is the singularity?
The end of the old ways.
Well, the singularity is that moment in 2012, interesting year, by the way, that moment in 2012 when computers become as smart as people, rapidly, within a couple of years, a computer becomes as smart as all people. And as he says, beyond that point, no one's predictions hold. Because how can we predict? It would be as crazy as a bacteria trying to predict what was going to happen when multiple-cellular animals came around. And we're about to undergo a change in our civilization that is going to be as profound as the Neolithic Revolution. And we're only seeing the very beginning of it. It's, in his view, three things, information technology, genomics, and nanotechnology that will lead that. None of that excludes, maintaining a natural lifestyle and wanting a pure, wholesome food and pure and natural and wholesome remedies. Certainly possible, but I believe that there are going to be very profound changes in our civilization in the next near period, and all of our predictions are going to be tested by reality, and that's on the off topic.
Well, awesome, Ralph. This was a great show. I really, really appreciate your time, taking your time out for this.
All right, I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I love to talk, anytime you want me on, just let me know.
Oh, definitely. I think we can. I'd like to have you maybe follow up with this third ELF transmissions. I may want to get that book for me. Remind me. I'll email it to you. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
But we're getting now into where we came all the way from back in Egyptian, Sumerian text, back all the way up to current time, and how all the law and what they created in the law binds us or ensnares us, so to speak, or enslaves
That's
us.
That's right. It makes us into a
illusion.
Public, makes private people into public people.
And how to operate with it, how to deal with it, how to give people practical solutions to get through the wizard's Olympic road, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you could, I'd like you to follow up on those last two shows. I will send you the book.
Okay.
And
I appreciate it.
You can even be happy to call in and talk with us and join us in on that. Being a lawyer, you might be able to reinforce some of our perspective of what we're trying to explain to people as far as well as protecting not only their rights, on all levels, including taking their vitamins and minerals, but protecting their property and their very futures.
That's right.
How critical
it's become. If you would remind me about it, I would be happy. I'd love to call in.
Definitely. I will do that.
There's a lot happening right now, but that is a sort of issue that I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I will do that then. Well, I'm going to have to end tonight's
show.
Make sure
I'm on your list. I'll make sure you're on my list.
I will do that, sir. I will do that. Thanks again.
All right.
Thanks again, Ralph. Thank you. And many
right.
thanks go out to our producer, Donald Newsom, for BBS Radio and what he and those involved with the BBS Radio Network have done. Now the number one internet radio show in the world. BBS Radio is the first to bring you truth, knowledge, consciousness, and so much more directly through the internet. Now we can finally get the truth out there to those who are so desperately seeking it. Thanks for tuning in, conscious listeners, and be sure to tune in next week for another enlightening show on The Simple Truth. Bye for now. Until next Saturday, same time, same place, and may your lives be filled with a great joy and wonder always. Love and light to all.
Mainstream, it's on BBSRadio.com.